They were supposed to be 3-1, but it turned into 1-2. Avery, Blake, and Camille fell into a passionate throuple, each drawn by desire and the promise of something new. For months they shared nights, whispered dreams, even daily routines. But something shifted. Tension stirred when Camille started to feel less seen. Avery intensified attention on Blake. Small comments turned into cutting jabs. Practices they thought were safe, check-ins, rule-setting, crumbled as jealousy nested in secret corners. Boundaries meant to protect them were weaponized. A lie here, a subtle betrayal there. Before any of them knew it, manipulation became more potent than love. One stormy night, an argument erupted. Camille stormed out. Avery stayed behind, silent and calculating. Blake followed her, terrified. By dawn, only two remained. One truth had been eliminated. So, if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. There are rules for love. Or at least, that's what Avery used to say. Rule 1, honesty. Rule 2, no secrets. Rule 3, everyone matters equally, or no one does. It was in a smoky cafe off South Rosewood Avenue that those rules first tumbled from Avery's lips. That night, everything shimmered. Neon lights through rain-streaked windows, the warm hum of espresso machines, Camille's laugh across the table, Blake's hand resting over Avery's, thumb grazing her knuckles. They were nothing yet, just sparks. But something unspoken had already begun to smolder. Camille had just moved to the city 2 months before. She was the outsider, the new voice in an old circle, arriving with chipped blue nail polish, oversized cardigans, and a tired notebook full of half-written poems. Blake met her first, through a spoken word event, and brought her around to just hang out. Avery was skeptical. She always was. But Camille had a strange gravity about her, not the kind that pulled you in instantly. No, Camille's draw was quiet and slow, like the undertow of something deeper. The first few weeks were platonic, group dinners, movie nights, a hike that turned into a thunderstorm, and a dash back down muddy hills. Somewhere along the way, boundaries blurred, not because anyone pushed them, but because none of them wanted to leave the moments they created. It was Blake who brought it up, hesitantly, one night after too much wine. What if we... I mean, not to be weird, but... what if this could be something, like real, with the three of us? The silence that followed was dense. Camille laughed, unsure if he was joking. Avery didn't. She leaned forward. You mean a thruple? Blake nodded. Yeah, I mean, only if it feels right for everyone. Camille looked between them, uncertain. The idea lingered, like incense smoke in the air. Avery was the first to say yes. Blake followed. Camille took a little longer, but the truth was, she had already begun to fall, for both of them, just in very different ways. The beginning was beautiful. They were cautious at first. Agreements were made. Weekly check-ins, no hidden messages, emotional transparency. If anyone felt left out, they had to say something, immediately. They thought communication would be their salvation. For a while, it was. They made it official one Friday evening. No big ceremony, just a dinner at home. Homemade pasta, candles, laughter spilling into the night. Blake kissed Avery, then kissed Camille, then Avery kissed Camille, and Camille kissed them both. It was awkward and honest and weirdly beautiful. In the beginning, the three fit like puzzle pieces. They'd all been in relationships before, messy ones, open ones, monogamous and not, but this felt like new territory, vulnerable, delicate, exciting. Their apartment transformed into a haven of tangled sheets, shared playlists, overlapping toothbrushes, and soft conversations late into the night. Blake, ever the empath, was the glue. He checked in the most. Camille brought the creativity, crafting little rituals and inside jokes. Avery provided structure, calendars, order, and a sharp sense of protection over the dynamic they'd built. For a time, they were whole. But perfection has a shelf life. It started small. It always does. Camille began to notice the way Avery's tone would shift when Blake wasn't around. A clipped comment here, a subtle judgment there. At first, she brushed it off as stress. Avery had a demanding job in marketing and hated when things felt out of control. Then came the first breach. Avery made a decision without consulting Camille. Something simple. She canceled a weekend trip the three had planned because Blake was exhausted. Camille only found out the night before. "I didn't think you'd care that much," Avery said. "You hate camping anyway." That wasn't the point, and she knew it. Blake apologized profusely, but Camille noticed how Avery stayed quiet, arms folded, watching like she was assessing a chessboard. That night, Camille cried in the shower, not because of the canceled trip, but because she suddenly felt like a guest in her own relationship, red flags woven into romance. They say polyamory requires more communication, more effort, more honesty, and they were trying. They really were. But something had shifted. Avery and Blake had known each other for years. There were inside jokes Camille didn't get, shared scars, old habits. Sometimes they would be on the couch, deep in conversation, and Camille would sit beside them and feel like background noise. She tried bringing it up. "I just feel peripheral sometimes. Like, I don't fit the way you two do." Blake reached for her hand. "That's not true, Cam. We love you." Avery smiled tightly. "You're overthinking again." Camille bit her tongue, again and again. Later that night, she overheard a hushed conversation between Avery and Blake in the kitchen. Something about how much longer this could work. She didn't catch the rest. When she stepped into the hallway, the whispering stopped. Avery's charm and control. Avery was magnetic in public. She charmed strangers, debated professors, and made everyone feel like they mattered. But behind closed doors, she could be cold. Precise. Emotionally calculated. Camille started noticing patterns. When Avery wanted something, she'd frame it like it was for the good of all three. When Camille pushed back, Avery turned it into a logic debate. If Camille cried, she was being dramatic. If she expressed needs, she was jealous. And Blake, he never took a side. He wanted peace. He wanted everyone happy. That made him easy to manipulate. Camille started journaling again. She wrote down what was said, what was promised, and what was denied. She needed to be sure she wasn't going crazy. She needed a record, because the lies were getting harder to track. The turning point. One night, Blake came home early from work. Camille was in the kitchen, headphones in, cooking. She didn't hear him enter. He walked past the hallway and saw Avery on the phone, whispering, "Not work, not family." The tone was flirty. "Of course I miss you," Avery said. "You know it's temporary. They won't even know." Then, as if sensing him, she turned. Their eyes locked. Avery didn't flinch. Later, she said it was a client. Camille tried to believe it. Blake wanted to, but something had cracked open. End of chapter 1. Tease. The facade was still intact, but hairline fractures had begun to show. What began as something beautiful was slowly turning into something else. Something unbalanced, manipulative, dangerous. Camille wasn't paranoid. Not anymore. She was becoming aware, and the person she had trusted most might be the one orchestrating her erasure. The apartment hadn't changed. Same soft lighting, same familiar hum of Blake's playlist in the background. Same scent of lavender and warm spice drifting from the diffuser. But for Camille, it didn't feel like home anymore. It felt curated. Every time she spoke, it felt like Avery's eyes were measuring her, calculating. Smiling, but just enough. Not too much. Like everything Camille said was quietly being filed away for later use. That night, the three of them were curled on the couch watching an indie film. Something French, moody, too quiet. Camille didn't remember the plot. She remembered watching Blake laugh at a line Avery whispered. She remembered Avery slipping her hand into Blake's under the blanket. And she remembered how her own hand, resting on the throw pillow, went untouched. She looked at Avery. Avery didn't look back. The language of sides. Polyamory was supposed to be about abundance. That's what they'd all said in the beginning. But lately, Camille felt like they were playing musical chairs with affections, and she was always the one left standing when the music stopped. She tried to initiate a check-in that weekend. They all sat at the kitchen island, mugs in hand, the way they had in the early days. But the dynamic had changed. "I feel like I'm being edged out," Camille said softly. Avery leaned back. "That's a strong accusation." "It's not an accusation, it's a feeling." "And feelings can be misleading," Avery replied with a small smile that didn't quite reach her eyes. "You've said before that you struggle with jealousy. Maybe this is one of those moments." Camille's jaw tightened. "I'm not jealous, Avery. I'm saying I don't feel seen." Blake jumped in, trying to diffuse the tension. Okay, let's not attack each other. Maybe we can all be a little more aware. I'll make time for just the two of you this week. Cam, how about Friday? Camille nodded, quietly grateful, but Avery didn't miss a beat. I thought we had plans Friday. Guess I'm just invisible now. The shift was immediate. Blake's face turned pale. Camille watched as guilt overtook his expression toward Avery, not her. The triangle had tilted, and now it had a sharp edge, the rise of the private conversations. Over the next few weeks, Camille noticed the whispers. Avery and Blake began talking in hushed tones when they thought she was asleep or in the shower. Sometimes they'd pause the conversation when she walked into the room, then start again like nothing had happened. One afternoon, Camille's phone buzzed while she was at work. It was a message from Avery. Hey, Blake's feeling overwhelmed. He asked for some space tonight, just giving you a heads up. Camille waited. She heard nothing from Blake all day. When she got home, his shoes were by the door. He hadn't gone anywhere. She walked into the bedroom and found them together. Avery curled up next to him, the two of them watching something on Blake's laptop, laughing. They didn't even notice her at first. When they did, Avery's smile was instant. Oh, hey, you're back. We figured we'd stay in after all. Long day? Camille said nothing. She turned and walked into the kitchen, her chest burning, emotional sleight of hand. That night, she wrote in her journal, gaslighting is not always big and loud. Sometimes it's subtle, soft lies, curated silence, gentle dismissal until you start to doubt what you even saw. She began recording voice notes too, not to share, just for herself, her own memory, because things were starting to blur. One morning, she asked Blake directly, why did Avery say you needed space last night? Blake looked confused. She said that? Camille nodded. He frowned. I didn't ask her to. I didn't even know she texted you. That was when Camille realized she wasn't just being excluded, she was being managed. Avery's narrative control. The next week, Camille suggested going out, just the two of them. Blake agreed, smiled even. It had been too long. They needed to reconnect. But when the night came, Avery had a meltdown. I can't believe you'd leave me out right now. I'm drowning at work. I needed tonight. And you two just, what, abandoned me? Camille tried to stand her ground. This isn't about excluding you. It's about reconnecting. We've barely had alone time in weeks. Avery wiped away a tear. So I'm just the villain now. Got it. Blake caved. The date was canceled. Again. Camille sat alone in the bedroom, listening to Avery sob on the couch, Blake's voice soft and apologetic, and she realized something terrifying. Avery wasn't just reacting. She was choreographing. Blake, the broken compass. Blake wasn't cruel, but he was exhausted. He had always wanted peace, harmony. He was raised to avoid conflict, to keep everyone happy. He didn't know how to say no to Avery's emotion, even when Camille's truth was just as urgent. Camille loved him, but she was starting to resent him too. She needed someone to see her, and he was looking through her. One night she confronted him, not with rage, but with grief. You don't protect me, she whispered. You don't even notice when I'm disappearing. Blake's eyes welled. I don't know what to do anymore. Camille nodded. That's the problem. The lie in the mirror. One rainy evening, Camille stood before the mirror in the hallway and asked herself a question she never imagined needing to answer. Is this love, or is this fear? The question stayed with her. That weekend, she suggested they revisit their boundaries. She wanted to talk. Not vent, just talk. Avery agreed, but the entire conversation was hijacked. Avery talked circles around her. Blake said little. When Camille tried to explain her discomfort, Avery reframed it as Camille's insecurity. When she pointed to examples, Avery laughed. Are you journaling again? You always do that when you're spiraling. Blake chuckled lightly, trying to ease the tension. Camille looked at him, stunned. He thought it was funny. She excused herself to the bathroom, shut the door, locked it, and cried, the quiet isolation. The people around Camille began to fade. Her friends stopped asking her to hang out. She canceled too often. Work became mechanical. She didn't write anymore. She barely read. Everything revolved around maintaining the peace, around Avery, around not losing Blake. One night, a friend texted her, You okay? Haven't seen you in weeks. Just checking in. She typed a response. I'm fine. Just busy. But she didn't send it. Instead, she powered off her phone and stared into the dark. Because the truth was, she wasn't fine, and she hadn't been for a while. There was something about silence that scared Camille more than yelling. Avery rarely raised her voice. She didn't need to. Her power was in what she didn't say, in the way she lingered at doorways just long enough to make Camille doubt herself, or the way she left certain messages open on her laptop screen, letting Camille see them without ever acknowledging they existed. This was no longer miscommunication. This was design. When affection becomes currency, Blake still kissed her, still held her hand, still made coffee just the way she liked it. But those gestures started to feel hollow, like they were being handed out equally, without depth or intention. Sometimes Avery would watch them from across the room, her eyes unreadable. Camille began to notice the pattern. Every time she and Blake shared something intimate, a quiet joke, a long hug, Avery would find a way to interrupt. A sudden question, a spontaneous chore, or worse, a dramatic shift in mood. One night, after a long talk with Blake, Camille leaned in to kiss him. They hadn't been close like that in a while. It was gentle, needed. And then came Avery's voice from the doorway. "I'm bleeding." Camille turned, startled. "What?" Avery held up her hand, a small cut, nothing deep, but her face was pale, fragile. "Can you help me clean it?" Blake moved instantly. Camille watched him go, and just like that, the moment was gone. Jealousy without a name. Camille stopped using the word jealousy out loud, because when she did, Avery would weaponize it. "You're always so insecure," Avery would say, brushing her off like a teacher correcting a child. So instead, Camille sat with the feeling. It settled in her chest like wet cement, not because she envied the attention Avery got, but because she could feel herself fading. Avery didn't just want to be loved, and she wanted to be the only one loved. Camille could feel it in the way Blake deferred to her, apologized first, folded under pressure. He wasn't choosing, he was surviving. Just like Camille, the throuple had become a triangle drawn with a crooked ruler. One side stretched longer than the others, one corner pointed like a blade, secrets on a screen. One afternoon, Camille forgot her phone at home and borrowed Blake's to check a missed call. He handed it over without thinking. But when the screen unlocked, something froze her in place. A message from Avery from just an hour earlier. "Don't let her twist things. Stay grounded. Remember what we said. She spirals when she's not the center. Be patient." Camille stared at the words. Her fingers went cold. It wasn't just Avery managing her. Blake was complicit. He saw her struggling, and instead of speaking with her, he had been venting to Avery, who used it to further her control. Camille handed the phone back. Quiet. Steady. She didn't mention it, but in that moment, something in her broke. The smile behind the knife. Camille began watching Avery with different eyes. She noticed how she mirrored people, laughing in sync, matching tone, slipping into comfort like a snake into tall grass. She noticed how people trusted her quickly, how Avery collected people and kept them close until they weren't useful anymore. Even their friends were drifting away. Not because of Camille, but because Avery was shaping the story. Camille heard a snippet of it one night at a dinner party. "She's going through something," Avery told a friend, sipping her wine. "We're trying to support her as much as we can. Just emotional patterns, trauma stuff. You know how that goes." Camille sat in the next room, frozen. She wasn't spiraling. She was being erased. Triangulation. Camille Googled the term one night just to be sure she wasn't imagining it. Triangulation, a manipulation tactic where one person doesn't communicate directly with another, instead using a third person to relay information, control narratives, or stir conflict. It hit her like a brick. That's exactly what Avery had been doing. Planting thoughts in Blake, feeding him doubt, positioning herself as the interpreter of Camille's behavior, Camille wasn't spiraling. She was reacting to pressure being applied from both sides. The breaking point at the gallery. It happened on a Friday. They'd all gone to a local art gallery. A friend of Camille's was showing a new collection. Abstract, emotionally raw. Camille felt alive again, surrounded by people, by truth, by art that wasn't filtered through Avery's lens. She spoke to an old flame there, Mara. Just a brief conversation. Friendly. Harmless. But Avery saw, and when they got home, the fight erupted. "What was that about?" Avery asked, voice cool and precise. "What?" "You know what? The little reunion act. With her." Camille blinked. We talked for 3 minutes. Avery folded her arms. "You flirted. You giggled like a child. What are we, Cam? Are we not enough?" Blake stood in the doorway, frozen. Camille's voice trembled. "You don't own me." Avery stepped closer. Then stop acting like you're above us. You're not the victim here. Blake stepped in, finally. That's enough, Avery. Avery turned to him, calm and wide-eyed. So now I'm the villain again? How convenient. Camille walked into the bedroom and shut the door. The night. Camille vanished. She packed a small bag, nothing dramatic, just enough for a night. Maybe two. She left a note. I need air. Please respect that. I'll be safe. Don't follow me. And she left. No yelling, no slamming doors, just a quiet exit. She stayed with her friend Sienna, someone Avery hadn't manipulated yet, and for the first time in months, she slept without fear. There was a time when Avery could command any room. She didn't speak loudly or wear flashy colors. It was her presence, measured, confident, always three steps ahead of everyone else. She knew how to tell a story that made her look like the hero, or at the very least, the misunderstood one. But even the best performances can unravel under enough scrutiny. And now, the audience was beginning to see the strings. Safe but not safe, Camille stayed with Sienna for 5 days. It was strange. How quickly peace could return once the pressure stopped. She noticed her breathing slowed. Her sleep deepened. Her laughter came easier. She cooked again. She journaled. Not to document gaslighting or lies, but just to write, to feel. Sienna didn't ask for details, she just gave space. That, in itself, felt like healing, but silence never lasts when you're escaping a controller. The text began by day two. Avery. I just want to talk. Avery. This isn't the way, Cam. Blake. She's hurting. Please, at least check in. Then came the guilt-laced ones. Avery. You're abandoning someone who loves you. Avery. Is this really what you want your legacy to be? Camille didn't respond. She knew better now. Therapy as a weapon. When she finally returned, Camille didn't go back home. She met Blake at a cafe. His face was pale, exhausted. He looked like he hadn't slept in days. I've been thinking a lot, he said quietly, about everything, about how I've handled things, about how I've let you down. Camille nodded. She said nothing. Blake looked like he wanted to cry. I was afraid of choosing sides. But by not choosing, I was choosing. I'm sorry, Cam. She reached for his hand. It trembled beneath hers. I want us to try therapy, he said. Not couples therapy. All three of us. A neutral space. Camille hesitated. She didn't believe Avery wanted a solution, but she did want Blake to see the truth. So she agreed. The first session. The therapist was gentle, neutral. Her office smelled like eucalyptus and leather. They sat in a triangle. How poetic. Camille spoke first. Her voice was calm. She laid out examples. Times she felt manipulated. Patterns that disturbed her. Moments that made her question her reality. Avery didn't flinch. Instead, she leaned forward and smiled. I think Camille has always had difficulty with trust, Avery said sweetly. Even before us, she struggles with feeling safe, and sometimes that makes her see threats that aren't there. The therapist raised an eyebrow. Camille, do you feel that's accurate? Camille's throat tightened. She looked at Avery, then at Blake. Blake wouldn't meet her eyes. No, Camille said. That's not what's happening. Avery shrugged. It's okay to not see it yet. It was masterful. Even in a room built for healing, Avery had turned truth into opinion, facts into narrative, the hidden message. That night, Camille wrote herself a note and tucked it inside her journal. You are not crazy, you are being cornered. Every moment she smiles at you while rewriting your truth, document it, remember it. One day you will need these details. Cracks in the armor. But something was changing. The therapist began to notice the dissonance. In session two, she questioned why Avery spoke for Blake and Camille so often. Why Blake deferred every emotionally charged question to Avery. Why Camille's words seemed grounded in specifics, while Avery's leaned on abstraction and speculation. By the third session, Avery became defensive. I don't appreciate the implication that I'm manipulating anyone, she snapped. It's not an implication, Camille replied, her voice steady. It's a pattern, and I'm done pretending it's not there. Blake finally looked up, and for the first time, he didn't rush to fix it. He just watched. Social slippage. The first public crack happened at a dinner party. Camille attended alone. Blake stayed home sick. Avery showed up late. Dressed immaculately, of course, but already simmering. She floated between conversations like a diplomat, but her control was slipping. Someone brought up mental health and boundaries in relationships. Camille said carefully. Sometimes we mistake control for care. Avery shot her a look, sharp, measured, then loud enough for the group to hear, she replied, Well, some people like being victims. It gives them purpose. The room went still. Someone coughed awkwardly. Camille held her gaze. She didn't flinch. Later, a friend leaned over and whispered, Are you okay? Camille didn't answer, but the seed had been planted. Others were starting to see the mask. Blake's awakening. That weekend, Blake came to Camille, alone. He looked pale, shaken. I read your journal, he said. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to invade, but it was open and I needed to understand. Camille didn't yell, she didn't cry. What did you find? She asked. Blake's voice cracked. Proof of things I ignored, of how many times I let you get erased. He looked at her like he was seeing her for the first time in months. I believed her, he whispered. And she made it so easy to believe. Camille nodded slowly. She's good at that. I'm so sorry, Cam. She didn't answer. Because the truth was, he wasn't apologizing to her. He was apologizing to the version of her that he let die piece by piece. The conversation that changed everything. Blake asked Camille one last question before he left that night. What do we do now? Camille looked out the window. Rain tapped gently on the glass. We survive, she said. But not with her. He nodded, and in that silence, the power dynamic that had once ruled all three of them cracked open like a fault line. Some storms don't roar when they arrive. They drift in quietly, darkening the sky one cloud at a time, until you look up and realize you're already soaked. That's how Avery moved now, not with charm, not with sweetness, just control, the kind that didn't ask permission, the kind that expected obedience. The plan. Avery knew Blake was slipping from her, not because of anything he said. Blake wasn't confrontational, but she saw it in his eyes, the hesitation, the pauses, the way he pulled his hand back too quickly now when they touched, the way he spoke to Camille without asking her first. She couldn't lose him. Camille? She'd already factored her out. A temporary complication, a piece of noise to manage. But Blake was hers. So she got to work, the subtle sabotage. It began with distance. Camille noticed messages from Blake stopped coming as often. Calls were missed, texts were delayed. One night she waited at the cafe for nearly an hour before giving up. No word from him until the next morning. Sorry, I was with Avery. Things got heavy. I didn't want to leave her alone. Camille didn't answer. But something felt off, so she tried a test. She messaged Blake that afternoon. Want to meet tomorrow at 7? Just us. I need it. He said yes, but at 6:52 he canceled. Avery's spiraling. I can't leave her alone right now. Please understand. The pattern was back, and Camille knew. He wasn't avoiding her. He was being intercepted, turning Blake into a prisoner. Avery changed tactics. Instead of fighting Camille's presence, she feigned vulnerability. One night, Blake came over to Camille's place. His eyes were red, his body trembling. She said she was thinking of hurting herself, he whispered. She's never said that before. I can't ignore it. Camille nodded slowly. Did she say how? Number, just that. I'm the only thing holding her together. Camille felt the bottom of her stomach drop. Avery had made herself the emergency, the reason Blake couldn't leave. It wasn't love, it was hostage logic. The lie that turned everything. A week later, Camille's job offered her a temporary transfer to another city. 6 weeks, a quiet place, a fresh air kind of job. She hesitated. Leaving felt like giving up, but staying felt like drowning with both lungs full. She told Blake over dinner. I haven't decided yet, she said, but maybe it's what I need. He looked down. I'd miss you. You already do. The silence sat thick between them. When she got home that night, Avery was waiting outside her building. In the dark, like a shadow. The confrontation. I know about the job, Avery said calmly. Camille didn't flinch. Then you know I'm considering it. Avery stepped forward. You're running. That's what you do. No, Camille replied. I'm surviving. Avery tilted her head. You think this is survival? Abandoning Blake? After everything? You're using him. Avery laughed. Number I have him. You just never did. Camille's hand trembled against the strap of her bag. Avery leaned in closer. If you go, don't expect him to be here when you come back. Camille didn't answer. She turned and walked away. Planting the final seed. Avery wasn't done. She sent Blake a carefully crafted message that night. Camille's leaving, for good. She never planned to stay. She's just been stringing us both along. Then another, you deserve someone who shows up, not someone who runs. She followed with a photo. A screenshot of Camille's travel itinerary. A fake one, booked through a dummy account. Departure in 48 hours, one-way ticket. Blake saw it, and he believed it. Just like she knew he would. Camille's despair. That night, Camille sat on the floor of her apartment and stared at her journal. It was filled with truth, with proof, with pain. But none of it mattered now, because Avery had done it. She had poisoned the last well. Camille's phone buzzed, a message from Blake. I hope you find what you're looking for. I can't do this anymore. That was all. No call, no explanation, just the closing of a door. Camille curled into herself and wept until her throat burned, the call she never expected. The next morning, Camille's doorbell rang. It was Sienna. Pack your things, she said. You're coming with me. Camille blinked. What? I know what's happening. I saw Avery last night, at the bar. She was manic, talking to people she barely knew, telling stories that didn't add up. Something's wrong. Camille stood slowly. What do you mean? Sienna's face turned serious. She said you left the city already. She said you ghosted Blake. That you're unwell. That she's trying to get you committed. Camille's stomach flipped. What? She said she has a friend at a psych unit that she might need to step in for your safety. Camille backed away, her breath catching. Avery wasn't trying to win anymore. She was trying to erase her. The escape. Sienna drove Camille out of town that night. No notice, no goodbyes, just distance. Camille turned her phone off, deleted her location, cleared her apps. It wasn't running, it was survival now. Because when someone is that good at rewriting the truth, the only defense is to make yourself disappear. Avery always knew how to control the story. She understood timing, emotion, optics. She was the one who rewrote reality in real time, turning confusion into advantage, silence into guilt, and love into debt. But even master manipulators forget one simple truth. You can only bend people so far before they snap, the void left behind. Camille had been gone for 10 days. No social media, no texts, no return address. Blake told himself he didn't care. He tried to believe what Avery had said, that Camille left because she was selfish, unstable, dishonest. But the silence was different this time. It wasn't cruel. It wasn't loud. It was clean. And that terrified him. Every day he reread the last message he'd sent. I hope you find what you're looking for. I can't do this anymore. No reply, no dots, no anger, just nothing. He asked Avery if she had heard anything. She shook her head and changed the subject. That was the first red flag. The second came when he noticed Avery had started sleeping with her phone under her pillow. Unraveling the lies. One night, Blake borrowed Avery's laptop while hers was charging. He wasn't looking for anything, but curiosity is a dangerous thing when it intersects with doubt. He clicked into her email. The inbox was open. She hadn't logged out. Maybe she forgot. Or maybe she didn't think he'd look. The most recent message made his stomach drop. To a dot contact at proxybox.io. Subject, re, one-way travel itinerary. Body. Thank you for confirming. Please ensure the digital footprint mimics an actual purchase. I don't want her getting suspicious. Blake stared at the screen. Number no, no, no. He opened the attached document. A fake itinerary. Camille's name. A one-way ticket. Not real. He scrolled down further. There were more messages. Messages painting Camille as unstable, paranoid, manipulative. All of them written before she left. All of them sent to people in their social circle. And all of them lies. Confrontation deferred. Blake didn't confront her that night. He watched her instead. Avery was making tea in the kitchen, humming, smiling, rehearsed. She moved like someone who thought she was untouchable, and maybe she was, for now. But something in Blake had changed. He couldn't unsee the truth anymore. And once he let himself admit what she'd done, what she was still doing, the entire timeline of their relationship started to crack and reform. It wasn't Camille who lost control, it was him. A call in the dark. That night, Blake sat in his car for over an hour, parked on a quiet street far from home. He held his phone in his lap, scared to dial, scared not to. Eventually, he called Sienna. She answered on the second ring. Hello? He cleared his throat. I need to talk to Camille. There was a long pause. "She's not ready," Sienna said. "Please," he whispered. "I know I let it go too far. I know I didn't protect her. But I didn't know. Not really. I believed her. I believed Avery." Sienna said nothing for a moment. Then, "She's safe. That's all you need to know." "I just want to apologize." "She's not ready to hear it." Blake nodded, tears filling his eyes. "I understand." He ended the call without asking again, because for once, he understood that someone else's boundaries weren't about him. The breakdown. The next morning, Avery sensed it. She always did. "You've been distant," she said over breakfast. Blake shrugged. "Just tired." "You're lying." He looked at her, carefully now. "Do you want to talk about the fake itinerary?" he asked. Avery froze, just for a second, but he saw it. Then she laughed. "I don't know what you think you found, but if you're falling for Camille's paranoia..." "Don't," Blake said quietly. "Don't twist this." Avery's expression shifted. Cold, calculated. "I was protecting us," she said. "She was sabotaging everything we built." "You sabotaged her?" "She was unstable." "You made her unstable." Avery's jaw clenched. "You're not thinking clearly." "No," he said. "For the first time, I am." The escape plan. That afternoon, Blake packed a bag. He didn't tell Avery he was leaving. He waited until she left for work. Then he grabbed his things, deleted his digital footprints, and texted Sienna, "I left. I'm done. I'm not asking for forgiveness. I just need to be somewhere that doesn't feel like a prison." Sienna replied 2 hours later with an address. Camille wasn't there, but it was a start, the last lie. When Avery came home and saw his things gone, she didn't cry. She didn't scream. She poured herself a drink, sat on the couch, and scrolled through old photos, ones where she smiled wide, and Blake looked half alive. Then she opened a new message thread and typed, "He's gone. Finally. I've cleared the board. Now it's just us." She attached a photo. It wasn't of Blake, it was of Camille, taken months ago, unaware, from a distance. For weeks, Camille had been a ghost, not running, not hiding, watching. She didn't speak to Blake. She didn't respond to Avery's messages. She stayed quiet, observant, grounded. She listened to Sienna's advice, to her own instincts, to the silence that had once scared her, and now made her feel safe. But Avery didn't like silence, because Avery couldn't control what she couldn't hear, and that was dangerous. The trap was set. It started with a phone call. Blocked number, mid-morning. Camille let it ring twice, then answered.
"Hello?"
The voice was unfamiliar, male, formal. "This is Officer James with Metro PD. We received a wellness report on your behalf. A woman named Avery Holloway claimed you may be at risk of self-harm. Are you safe right now?" Camille froze. "Yes," she said slowly. "I'm perfectly fine. Who filed the report?" There was a pause. The officer cleared his throat. "We're not permitted to disclose that information over the phone." But Camille already knew. The visit. That evening, Blake showed up, not unannounced. Sienna had let him through. Camille didn't rise from the chair where she was sitting. He looked thinner, older. His voice was careful. "I didn't come here to fix anything," he said. "I just came to tell the truth." Camille nodded once. "Go on." "I found the emails, the photos, the false narratives, the messages she sent people behind your back. I saw what she did, and I saw what I let happen." Camille's eyes didn't move from his face. "She's still watching you," he added. "I know," she said. "I don't want to be part of that anymore." Camille finally looked away, then stopped being a shadow. Blake nodded slowly. "I'm sorry." She stood and walked past him, not saying a word, but she didn't slam the door behind her. That was something. The final play. It was late when it happened. Camille returned to her temporary apartment around 11 p.m. She opened the door and froze. The window was unlocked. She never left it unlocked. Her bag was still there, her keys. But her journal, the one she always kept by the bed, was gone. And in its place, a single photo. An old one. All three of them. Smiling. The last night they were happy. On the back, in neat handwriting, "We were better when you didn't speak." The police involvement. Camille didn't hesitate. She called the police, filed a report, showed them the email history, the threats, the evidence of stalking. She filed a protective order. They took it seriously. Stalking, invasion of privacy, potential danger to her life. But they couldn't arrest Avery yet. Not without proof of direct threat or physical harm. She's careful, the officer said. She walks the line. Camille nodded. Not forever. Blake's break. It was Blake who broke it. He filed a formal statement with the police, gave them the emails, the fake travel documents, the threats, the photos Avery had taken of Camille without her knowledge. He handed over the backup drives, all of it. She's slipping, he said, and I don't want to be her shield anymore. The confrontation. They found Avery 2 days later in a hotel outside the city. She was calm when they brought her in. Composed, even smiled at the officer booking her. I just wanted to protect the people I loved, she said. You know how hard that is? No one tells you how hard that is. The trial. It wasn't dramatic. It was slow. Blake testified. So did Camille. So did Sienna. So did the therapist they had once seen together, who spoke of Avery's tendency to control every frame of the narrative. Emails, photos, voice recordings, all laid out in court. Avery didn't cry. She didn't speak. She stared at Camille the whole time, and Camille didn't look away. Not once. Aftermath. Avery was sentenced to 18 months with mandatory psychological evaluation, stalking, harassment, identity manipulation, threatening communication. It wasn't enough, Camille thought, but it was something. Blake left the city. Camille stayed. She didn't disappear. She got louder. She started writing again, speaking at community events, teaching others about gaslighting, emotional coercion, psychological control. She told her story, quietly at first. Then, with power, because the only way to kill a lie is to flood it with truth. Closing scene. 1 year later, Camille sat on a panel titled Reclaiming Truth After Manipulation. A woman in the audience raised her hand. How did you know it was real? The abuse, I mean. How did you know it wasn't in your head? Camille smiled softly. Because one day I stopped asking why I felt crazy and started asking who made me feel that way. The room went quiet, then applause, and in the front row, a seat sat empty. But Camille didn't need it filled anymore. Three was never the problem. The lie was, and once the lie died, Camille finally had room for the truth to breathe.